I'm Chris Farrell, and this is On Watch. Welcome to On Watch, everybody, the Judicial Watch podcast, where we go behind the headlines to cover news and information that the mainstream media really doesn't want you to know about. We try to recover some lost history and explain the inexplicable. Well, if you're watching the news at all in the last week, you saw that a woman who never won a primary has become nominated as the Democratic Party presidential nominee, Kamala Harris. I guess really appointed by the Central Committee of the General Secretariat. It's like Soviet days. So this person has, although never been voted for, she's the party nominee. And as part of that really strange political process, she also selected a vice president to join her on the ticket. And we have somebody joining us today who can tell us all about the new vice presidential nominee, because she's experienced the kind of the sharp end of the stick when it comes to Minnesota Governor Walz. Joining us today on Watch is Lisa Hansen. Welcome to On Watch, Lisa.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate being here.
It's great that you joined us, and we appreciate it. You've had your own sort of firsthand experience with Governor Walz and his administration in Minnesota. Tell us, for those who are not familiar with you and kind of the saga or the story of what you went through, what was it like being a citizen of the great state of Minnesota back around 2021?
Oh, boy. Was my life ever upended? Yes, I'm happy to tell the story. Thank you again for allowing me to. It's a really important story to hear. America needs to hear. The shutdowns came. Our governor announced 2 weeks. We will be shut down for 2 weeks. But that didn't include everybody. So that was the first red, or maybe the second red flag. The businesses that included was my business, restaurant. So it included restaurants, bars, gymnasiums or gyms, dance studios, hair salons, that sort of thing.
What was allowed to be open?
Yes, in stark contrast, he allowed big box stores such as Walmarts and Targets and Home Depots, et cetera, to be open, as well as liquor stores and even strip clubs, believe it or not.
Well, everyone knows that's essential. That's essential activity for the great state of Minnesota. Liquor stores and strip clubs. Yeah. The state cannot get by without those.
Apparently not. So here we were, and we didn't have any idea what was going on. What is this new thing, this global pandemic, you know? And so for the 2 weeks, we went ahead and consented to close down to see what was going on. Well, 2 weeks turned into about 2.5 months, and we still weren't open up fully. I happened to have a dine-in restaurant, and so this affected so many of us in the state of Minnesota. Many businesses did not make it through even the first shutdown. Second full shutdown came in November, and we really weren't making it. My husband and I had hung on and put every cent we had into the business, trying to keep the doors open. We did everything we could possibly think of. And I'm sure, right, business people generally are really smart people. And we know if we've been in business for a while and we've had success, we know we can adapt. That's the word I'm looking for.
Sure.
Adapt, and we can figure out a way.
Sure.
But man, when you take somebody's revenue away from them, or 90% of their revenue, even 50% of the revenue, even 25% of the revenue, businesses can't make it.
Tell us a little bit about your restaurant, and just give us a feel for the sort of business you were running.
Yeah, thank you. And by the way, I'm just a regular wife, mom, grandma, you know, from the Midwest, and hardworking like so many Americans are. I'm just a regular American. And our business was just a great, it was it was a great business in the heart of historical downtown Albert Lea, the city of Albert Lea in Minnesota, southern part of Minnesota. We had such a great following, great business, coffee and wine bistro is what it was. We also served food. We had some nightlife going on. I love music, all types of music. And so we had live music every Friday night, and just a great place to come and relax let your hair down, if you will.
Sure.
So it was a great place. We'd been in business for about, at this time, I think it was about seven and a half years, and doing very, very well. We were not a multi-million dollar company by any stretch of the imagination, but we were doing all right. We employed a few people, it was a good business.
Yeah, well, I tell you, you're a success story. Because as you well know, getting past that first couple of years is really the threshold. Yeah. And once you've gotten past that, and of course you were in business for 7+ years, you've got an operating concern there. You've got a real enterprise that's like you said, providing jobs to people and serving the community, and certainly a positive influence on the community as a place for people to come and either have coffee or wine, or like you said, you had a little, I guess, musical entertainment on the weekends.
That's right. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I mean, just a nice place to go and hang out with your friends or family. And so COVID comes along. You're supposed to close 2 weeks to flatten the curve. Remember that? We were all going to flatten the curve in 2 weeks.
I remember that. I remember.
another Fauci lie. Nonetheless, so this second round of closures comes in, and this is enacted by Governor Walz. Is that how that came about?
Yes. While the rest of the country was, in essence, opened back up,
right?
He was shutting us down again. Governor Walz was shutting us down. Absolutely. And again, we knew from the very beginning back in March that, well, wait a second, a governor can't make law. A governor cannot direct the people's lives. There's all these things put in place, right? We have the three branches of government, and these things are put in place for the protection of the rights of the people, the God-given, constitutionally protected rights of the people.
Yeah, there's no pandemic clause in the federal or the Minnesota Constitution. It doesn't say,
no, there's not.
But if everyone gets sick, we're scrapping it all. You can do whatever you want, right? That's not in there.
Does not exist. And so here we knew that this isn't right. We didn't really know what else to do. There was a whole lot of crazy, crazy stuff that was going on all across America and definitely in the state of Minnesota.
Right.
So I think all of us were trying to regroup through all of that and figure things out and survive, especially if we were, you know, business owners, et cetera. So here we were. And in November, the second shutdown came. I told my husband, if he does this again, if Governor Walz shuts us down again, we have two choices. I either close my doors permanently,
right,
never to do business again in that capacity, and we figure out how to pay off our debt. The other option, and I knew that we had the right to, for this other, the second option, the other option was to open fully and operate as normal and let's see if we can survive this. So that's what we did. We opened fully. We actually joined forces with an organization that I think was fantastic, put a lot of helps out there for people. I said, hey, if you want to, jump on the freedom train here, we'll help you open up your business or we'll give you suggestions. And this is kind of how it's going to go. Open up fully because we have that right, because we have that freedom or liberty to be able to do that.
Correct.
And try to, you know, operate our businesses. So we did. There was a specific day that we were all going to open up. And when I say we all, what I mean by that is this organization reached out to business owners in the state of Minnesota. There was about 200 of us initially that jumped on board and said, you betcha, we're in. We want to see if we can save our businesses. Unfortunately, within 48 hours, about 90% or more of those businesses shut back down. So
they
it left
they
about
didn't have,
10.
They didn't have the guts for it, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately. Because the idea was, really, it should have been 2,000, in my opinion. It should have easily been 2,000 businesses,
sure,
that were going to Yeah. But 200, and our the goal of that was, well, we know that the state cannot, it'd be overwhelming for the state to try to come after 200 businesses. But when only about 10 of us, 10 give or take, remained open, well, the state could handle that. So that's exactly what they did. They came after us with all of their resources that they have access to. And it was a nightmare from there forward for about the next couple of years, I suppose. So Minnesota Governor Walz, Attorney General Keith Ellison came after me and my business. I received a cease and desist, almost immediately. I did not obey that initially. I stayed open beyond that until the point that what they were doing to me became so overwhelming that we needed to be able to get our feet under us legally and lawfully. Right. We were legal and lawful in everything we were doing. But I'm talking now, they've thrown, I believe it was 5 civil cases at me and 2 criminal cases at me.
Talk about lawfare, so, right? Talk about lawfare. Talk about using the full weight of the law to crush a private business owner who's just trying to do business. I mean, I guess, you just weren't the right kind of business, because if you're one of their select few, then you know that, the virus can't get you, right? If you're in a big box store, virus can't get you. If you're in a strip club, the virus can't get you. But if you go to your cafe and you get a cup of coffee or a glass of wine, obviously you're just a virus magnet. That's their thinking. That's their logic somehow.
Right. Yeah. I have a feeling their logic was, the places they shut down, it's interesting. A lot of them, you think about the bars and the restaurants, a lot of people do, they get together, they talk, about liberties, they talk about liberties and freedoms. And right. We don't want that going on in the state of Minnesota now,
exactly.
Do we?
Yeah. That's what, I guess Walz would think of that as a reckless First Amendment exercise, right?
There you go. Yeah, he's.
So you're under attack. You've got 5 civil suits and 2 criminal actions going against you. What do you do?
Oh wow. Well, we tighten our bootstraps. We tighten our belt, and we say, okay, we're going to figure this thing out. We're gonna walk through this. We knew that they would probably come after us. I'm not going to say that we knew how devastating it would be. So we ended up, because they came after us with guns a-blazing, if you will, we ended up closing down after about 6 days, I think it was, after the cease and desist.
Right.
It was too much. They were overwhelming us. And, of course, this is the way they behave. That was the whole point. And then the other part of that was they had planned from the get-go to make an example out of those that they came after.
Right.
Mostly women, Chris, in the state. Is who they came out. The Attorney General Keith Ellison and Governor Walz came after mostly women, and that kind of lines up with what we know about the two of them.
I guess you're not the right kind of woman, because if you were their preferred type of woman, then you would have gotten a state grant or something to do business.
For whatever reason, you
didn't fit their preferred demographics, or you weren't the select kind that get their favor somehow.
That's right. Because a government can pick and choose, right? The governor can make laws and pick and choose, and no, everything he did. And this was a great education for me. Boy, did I learn a lot, and still learning today so much. But the governor has no legal authority to do what he did. He's just not given that legal authority.
Right.
In fact, the emergency executive order that he issued did not give him authority to directly control the people's lives. It was applied, the emergency executive order that he used applies directly to the executive branch. And as far as I remember, I was not employed in the executive branch.
No, you were just an ordinary citizen. Imagine that.
I was. Yeah, imagine that. So anyway, so we went through litigation. I've never been to court before. I've never been in trouble with the law. I'm a law-abiding citizen, and I was all the way through this as well. Even opening up my business, I was law-abiding. When you look at the rule of law, Chris, and it's amazing. I learned one of the biggest things I learned is the state of Minnesota. If you're in the judicial system, at least all the judges that I faced, for anywhere from district all the way up to Minnesota Supreme Court, they're in lockstep. They don't have to follow the rule of law with the governor and the attorney general's office, et cetera, et cetera. They get to make up the rules as they go. They get to ignore the law and the rules that they choose to, and they get to make up the rules, and even the fact that Governor Walz cannot create law. Yeah, it can't do it.
Are state judges in Minnesota, are they elected or appointed?
Both.
Okay.
Both.
All right.
Yeah.
Because, you know, state by state, they're all different. And so some cases,
yes,
you've got a guy who's run for office. In other cases, you know, he's been appointed from on high and he's more of a political animal. So I was just curious what the dynamic was there between elected and appointed judges, because some are just, you know, servants of the party and others are kind of tied into the public more, and they've got a better vibe of their constituency. So that was just a curious question on my part.
Yes. Yeah. Good question. First time I've been asked that question in doing these interviews now, but yes, so it goes both ways. And I see a lot of things that need to be, you know, changed with the judicial system. Again, every judge that we faced, I was denied due process over and over again. And most of our, our documents would have obviously contained challenging their claims, of course.
Right.
We challenged everything at many, many levels. There was so much. You know, looking back, just again, as a regular American gal, I'm looking back and I'm thinking, wow, do these guys get away with a lot? And they're not being held accountable. It's sickening. It truly is sickening what they get away with.
Yeah. I believe you. I know. I mean, the arrogance of government officials is breathtaking.
It really is. And Chris, I was honestly, I'm embarrassed to say, but I was ignorant to a lot until I was, you know, I jumped in the deep end basically.
Yeah.
And I had to, you know, learn how to keep my head above water. And, I was ignorant to the truth, the evil that really does exist.
So civil litigation is meant to punish you financially. That's the reason for civil litigation, is to extract a pound of flesh, you know, dollars and cents wise, and to make things unpleasant for you in sort of a regulatory way. But they came after you criminally, and that's a whole different story. That seeks to rob you of your liberty and to lock you up in jail. And so, I mean, you can pay fines and you can go through an administrative process. That's painful enough with lawyers and fees and all that other nonsense. But the criminal aspect of this, that's a whole different animal. Tell us about what you went through on this criminal prosecution.
Well, obviously, we tried to have everything dismissed, you know, and to no avail. And for good reason, we tried to have everything dismissed. Again, nothing was based on rule of law. So going through the civil cases was bad enough.
Right.
And then having to appear in court in front of a jury, I had a jury trial.
What did they charge you with? What was your criminal offense?
Yeah. So they charged me with 5 counts of violating the governor's emergency executive order and 1 count of public nuisance.
I'm laughing. Yep. Believe me, I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing at them.
I know.
It's they are so pathetic. I mean, this is a Stalinist tactic. It's the worst kind of government abuse. So tell me what about this experience you had being criminally prosecuted.
Right. Yeah. Again, it was nothing I've ever experienced before. Nothing comes even close to it. By the way, I decided to handle my own case as sui juris. or pro se, however you want to say it.
Sure.
And the reason I did that is not because I am some brilliant person and I know law inside and out. Really, the rest of the state, what was happening with the other business owners in the state, by the way, as far as I know, no other business owner was prosecuted criminally. I was the only one in regards to the shutdowns, et cetera. So I decided to handle my own case because every other attorney in the state of Minnesota was losing for their clients. And I figured, well, if we're going to lose, we can do that all by ourselves and not have to pay the hundreds of thousands in attorney fees, right?
That's pretty smart.
Unfortunately, we actually did lose. We were not successful. But so I handled my own case. And I'm going to say, you know, I've talked with people that have been in court many, many times and they handle their own cases. And that's not where I was. It was frightening, to be honest with you. It was such an overload of information that I had to take in. My husband was by my side 110% all the way through. We did this as a couple, other than they would not let him. I'm skipping a little bit ahead, but they wouldn't let him come to jail with me. So I got to do that by myself. Not really by myself. I'm going to be honest here. The Lord was with me all through this. I'm so grateful for that.
Amen.
So I go to court. I have to choose it. I have to be along with the prosecuting attorney. I get to choose my jury members, right? So much, Chris, that I had never experienced. And, you know, we researched and studied and educated ourselves hours and hours and hours every single day. It was really something else. So we go to court. Well, pre-trial, the prosecuting attorney and the judge decide to pull a fast one on me. They said, well, when you're in front of the jury, we don't want you to present your defense. My defense being constitutional, statutory, and case law. That was all my defense. I had used all of that in all my documents. You can't use that, Ms. Hansen, is what they told me.
What are you supposed
to
use? I mean, that is the fundamental building blocks of how you would put on a defense. What are you supposed to do?
Exactly. What was I supposed to do? So here that was, what did I have left? I really had nothing left. I did my best every time. Oh, I was also threatened. If you present any of this law in front of the jury, the judge told me, I will hold you in contempt of court.
What's the name of this judge?
Joseph A. Butel. B-U-E-T-E-L-L or 1-L. I can't remember. Joseph A. Butel. That is the judge. We did file to have him recuse himself. He said no. We took that to it. We appealed that. They said no. Nope. He's the judge on your case.
I'm gonna assign a couple of staff members at Judicial Watch to look up his history. It should be quite interesting.
I'm sure
he's just a stellar member of the judiciary in Minnesota. I'm certain.
Oh, you'll find some things. And without getting into all of that, you will find some things. Your team, if they actually do that, they will find some really nefarious things connected to that judge. So anyway, no, he was not there for the people's rights. He was there to make an example out of me.
Right.
In fact, if you look at the transcript, he says so.
Really? That's
astounding.
Absolutely.
Right in the transcript. Yeah. Yeah. So what we learned real fast is, okay, he doesn't care about the Constitution. He doesn't even care about statutory or case law. I can't mention that in court. And although I did try, he did threaten. He would call me. He'd stop me, call me up to his bench and remind me, I will hold you in contempt of court if you continue. And then he'd look at the jury and he would say, you know, dismiss what she said. Pay no attention. At the end of the trial, listen to this. At the end of the trial, he's speaking to the juror members. At the end of the trial, I will tell you the law.
Well, I mean, that's, in a sense, judges are supposed to instruct the jury on legal questions that are before them. So But I am quite certain that what he was doing is that he was going to tell them their verdict. But it is a responsibility of the judge to instruct or inform the jury on sort of the legal question that's before them and how they're there to consider it. So, but like you said, I don't think that necessarily was what was conveyed. Nonetheless, how long did your trial last?
It was only about a 4-day trial, and
I'm surprised it went that long.
Yeah. We had witnesses we questioned witnesses on the stand. All those witnesses were called in by the prosecutor.
Right.
Honestly, I felt I had a pretty solid, a very solid case in regards to the law, the rule of law, constitutionally and statutorily. I really believed that taking that into court, we would have at least had a hung jury, right?
Sure.
But that was all taken from me. They never heard my defense.
Yeah, that's astounding. Now, do you think the jury? I mean, they convicted you, so obviously they came down on the side of the state. But do you think any of the jurors were at least sympathetic or got or understood the position that you were in?
That's a good question. I don't think they understood fully what was going on. I think they truly thought that I had broken law, that I did not have the right, the constitutional right or God-given right, which is protected by the Constitution. I really believe they believed I did not have the right to do what I did. That's my feeling.
Yeah. Sadly, I mean, Americans now, particularly younger Americans, are horrible on civics. They have no idea how the country is organized legally. They don't understand the founding documents. They don't understand a lot of stuff. They just, basically they do as they're told, which is always alarming. And I think we saw that in COVID with people who, obeyed ridiculous orders and people that felt they had to go off and, obey every rule and every decree and every warning and every threat, and that they couldn't simply say no. that no is a complete sentence, and a lot of people just went along with the game. I'm very happy and very proud of you, and you have our thanks and our respect for sticking to your guns and doing what you did. I know you went through hell. I mean, I know that this criminal trial must have really... It's extremely stressful. It's extremely, it creates anxiety and turmoil. It's loaded with strife. But to go through that is very courageous. And a lot of people, I think, don't have the guts. They would have tried to plead out or they would have caved in and done other things. Yeah. So you're a brave lady and you're very courageous to do what you did. So tell us what happened. They come back with a guilty verdict against you. What did they find you guilty of?
Violating the governor's emergency executive order, which again I will say over and over and over until I have no more breath. not allowed. It was unconstitutional, unlawful.
Did they get you on the public nuisance charge?
Yes.
Okay. It's a fake charge.
If I remember correctly, and what I was told by attorneys that I did speak with, that they laughed as well, just like you did with that charge for public nuisance.
Right.
They laughed and they said, "Yeah, they just throw that in there for good measure." Really, that's very common.
Well, it's the one legit. I mean, it doesn't really apply to you. Don't get me wrong, but it's the one statute that's sort of already on the books. That is,
correct.
It's been on the books for 200 years, so no one's going to say that isn't a real law. The phony walls, I'm the dictator of Minnesota law, no one would buy that. That's completely made up nonsense. So they had to stick one conventional statute in there to kind of hang something on if they didn't find on behalf of Walls and his dictatorial decree that he made. So that's why they stuck it in there, That's it's a trick, really, more than anything else. So you're found guilty. Did they immediately take you into custody, or what happened then?
Yeah, they after the the tirade that the judge exhibited during the sentencing.
The judge went off and had a little fit from the bench.
Oh yes, I'll always remember. He's sitting at the bench with his robe on, and he gets very, very red in the face and leans in. And for about 20 minutes, he berated me. It was his turn. It was his turn to tell me what a dangerous individual I was, and that they would be making an example of me so that no one else would do this, would do what I did. So after that, towards the end of that, I'm sitting up, at the table. I don't remember what that area is called, but I'm sitting at the table, and he's berating me. And all of a sudden, I see from my right and from my left these very large deputies coming in, closing in towards me.
Because you're a tremendous threat. I'm sure you're a very scary lady. Yeah,
I apparently am. I'm 5'4" and probably 110 pounds or whatever.
they gotta get a hold of you. Yeah,
you never know what I could do.
Right,
so,
right.
So I knew immediately that I was going to jail right then. And that was a bit of a surprise to me. And I wasn't prepared for that part of it, but, whatever. And then one also came from behind. So it took three large, good-sized guys to take me into custody, the side door. I remember that moment very well. I gathered my stuff. I handed it off to my husband, who was obviously, behind me.
Sure.
And I looked at one of the deputies and I said, "Can I give my husband a kiss goodbye?" And he thought for a moment, and really, he was just a big, these men were big teddy bears. he said, "Yes, go ahead," even though they weren't supposed to let me do that. So I said goodbye to my husband, and on the way through the door, as I was going through the door to the jail, the only time I'd been in jail, I take that back. I said I'd never been in jail. I have been in jail on a ministry for a ministry purpose, ministering to the inmates.
Right. Bless you for that
regard. So they're escorting me in through the door, and everything is just flooding your head. How did this happen so fast? Here we are. I kind of knew this would happen, but yet it's still shocking, to the system. It's trauma, everything I've been through. And so as I was going through the doors, I said, I raised my hand, not in a communistic way, by the way. I just raised my hand for liberty. I said, "For liberty and for freedom."
Good for you.
Yeah. And that was actually reported on in some of the news medias that were there as well. So
what were you sentenced to? How long did the judge sentence you for?
Sentenced me to 90 days and $1,000 fine, which we got the $1,000 fine back later because he double sentenced me, or, it was one or the other, not both. But he was so excited to, get me.
Yeah. Whenever you see judges like that, I encourage viewers to go back and get on YouTube or Google up pictures of the Stalin show trials or of Nazi judges towards the end of the Third Reich when they were sentencing people from the July 20th bomb plot, and watch the demeanor and the character of those judges, because a lot of them are leaning forward in the manner that you discussed. They're sort of red-faced and foaming at the mouth. And we should never forget that really our judges are nothing more than government attorneys in black robes, right? They're just another government employee drawing a paycheck from the public treasury, and they get to wear a black robe. So I understand that they have a job to do, but I think that the deference that is paid and the enormous authority that they're given, they should act with humility and with grace as servants of the public, and not screaming at a small business owner, a wife, a mom, a grandmother, because that's the kind of conduct and behavior that, the mask slips and you get to see who they really are. So, So you were taken into custody. What were the conditions of your confinement? Where were you held, and how were you, what was the environment like?
I was held in the, Fremont County Adult Detention Center, which is located in Albert Lea, Minnesota, which is where my business was, Albert Lea.
Right.
So I was there, Here's a fun little part of the story, if any of this can be fun. I was there for one night. The next day, these, again, large deputies came into my cell unannounced, or, you know, knock and then come in. And they said, get up, grab your stuff. We're moving you. And I'm at this point, you know, I'm not sure what's going to happen, and a little bit afraid, you know, honestly.
Sure.
And I said, where are you taking me? And they said they wouldn't tell me. Grab your stuff. Hurry up. Etc. So finally, on the way, after they loaded me into the van, they told me they were taking me to a women's detention center, because the one I was in is a men's detention center, and ladies are not kept there. Women are not kept there for a long period of time.
Right.
They move them on to the women's jails. And so they were moving me up to Steele County, which is Owatonna, Minnesota, about 30 miles north. They were in a hurry to get going because the weather was bad. This was, you know, a winter storm, and they had to get on the road so they could get back.
Right.
So we went up there. That was a whole nother ordeal, and got there. I was there for 3 nights. I was on lockdown, COVID lockdown, in myself, 23 hours out of 24, believe it or not. It was crazy. I thought I was, by day three, I thought I was going to have a real issue with this, because you just don't know until you're in that situation.
Right.
Day three happens, or after day four, actually, morning, another deputy comes to my cell and says, grab your stuff, we're moving you. And now I'm thinking, where to now? You know, I'm getting further away from home,
right,
if you will.
Right.
And so he says, actually, he said, I can't talk about it or whatever. Finally, when I get back, or he tells, on the way back, they tell me, we're taking you back to Freeborn County. The reason they did that, I find out later from one of the jailers in the Freeborn County Jail, is that I was too high profile. They were getting too many phone calls about me being, you know, arrested. And so Steele County tells Freeborn County, she's your problem. You can have her back. This is what I was told.
Congratulations.
So, yeah. Maybe a good problem to have.
Yeah.
So I went back to Freeborn and spent the rest of my time there. Now, I was there, I served 60 days, I got out a third early on good behavior, even after being convicted of a public nuisance.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? I got out on good behavior.
The tremendous danger that you are to the public.
Absolutely.
So your confinement there back in the original jail, I guess there's a women's wing or section, so you were segregated. You weren't in the general,
yes,
population with other guys there.
No.
Yeah.
No, there was a little area. We called it the intake, or they called it the intake.
Right.
And also the outtake. It was where you saw everybody coming in and going out, and they had their holding cells there, right? And so the women's holding cell is where I remained for the duration.
Okay. And what was your experience? So once you finally got settled in, what was your experience and treatment like for the 60 days that you were confined?
Well, I'm very grateful that I have not had the experience that some people who have been, you know, put or have been incarcerated have experienced some horrific things. I kind of had the favor of most all of the jailers, not all of them, but most of them knew what my story, and a couple of them shared with me that they could not believe that I was there serving time,
right,
in their jail.
Right.
What a racket, you know, what a sham.
Yeah.
It was wrong, et cetera, et cetera. So they were very kind to me.
Good.
And
good.
I appreciated that. Good. I was in a good company, I'll say, as well, because all of the inmates, or a large percentage of them that I had the opportunity to visit with, were all behind me and believed in our rights and our freedoms as Americans. And I learned a lot of things while I was in there. I learned that inmates are people too, that they're very intelligent. Many of them are very intelligent people with a lot of gifts and abilities. You know, they just, unfortunately, there's this demon in their life called addiction. I also learned that jail is no place for an addict. You know, it's just a revolving door for many of them.
Right,
so,
right. I mean, I don't think that, maybe people do know, but in my limited experience, you know, an awful lot, as you touched on, an awful lot of the persons going in and out, there's, you know, two things. There's either some psychological or emotional disturbance,
yeah,
or there's a very big question, a very big struggle on alcohol and drug addiction. And those two things fuel or at least serve as root causes for a lot of the folks who are locked up.
That's right. It's very, very sad to see. My heart breaks for these folks. They need real help.
Do you consider-
And I was even told by the jailers that they said, you know, we're not trained to take care of these things.
Sure.
Yeah.
Did you have an opportunity to do a little ministering to people? Did you share your faith?
You betcha.
That's a blessing unto itself, right?
It was amazing. I got to spend a lot of time with the Lord. I was able to have my own Bible, which I very much appreciated having my own Bible. I had the opportunity to share the gospel, to encourage some of the ladies that came through there, and hopefully to be a blessing to them and give them the message of the redemption that Christ offers us. And in fact, one of my cellmate shared with me one day after I had shared with her a few days prior that she had given her life to the Lord. And so that was, you know, that if that was the only good thing that happened, it was worth it all.
That's it right there. You know, encouragement is like oxygen, right? So just a little bit of encouragement and hope, and you can turn some stuff around. So I'm glad you had that. It's a huge gift back to you. You probably never thought of it as they were taking you away in chains, but you know, it's you received something from that as well, I think.
Absolutely.
Do you consider yourself a political prisoner of Governor Walz?
No doubt. I was definitely a political prisoner of Governor Walz and his cohorts, Attorney General Keith Ellison. Absolutely.
Yeah, Keith Ellison, he's got an outrageous track record. Folks can Google up his history when he was in Congress and now back in Minnesota as the Attorney General. He's quite a character with some pretty outrageous stuff in his background.
Absolutely, he sure was.
Lisa, where can folks learn more about you and your story, and how can they follow what you experienced, and then kind of going forward, how can they get in contact with you or follow what you're up to, what you're doing?
Yeah, thank you for asking. You know, if you Google Lisa Hansen, you should a lot of stuff should pop up. The name of the restaurant was The Interchange. Of course, it's gone by now. We didn't cover that, but it was literally destroyed, you know, for a lot of obvious reasons. The Interchange, INTER, change. So they can certainly find out more of my story. There's a documentary out there that I would highly recommend. It tells more detail, goes into more detail.
What's that called? What's the documentary called?
Oh my goodness. It's My Turn Now, I believe is the title. I should know that. It's been a few years since we've done it. It's been a little bit, a couple years, but it's My Turn Now, I believe is what it's called. So, you know, take a look around on the web and to learn more about what we're doing. I ran right after I got out of jail. I hit the ground running, ran for Senate, Minnesota State Senate. And was not successful at that, but that was another great education and a great time of learning. Now things went kind of quiet for a while. We continued to be harassed by the state. I can't really talk about that right now just yet because it's still an open case, apparently.
But I guess the lesson for our viewing audience is that even though you would think, okay, well, that was a bad phase and you moved through it, these are vindictive, nasty people, and they will exercise the full weight of not just government authority but administrative authority. They'll try to, you know, give you a death by a thousand cuts with paperwork, and so I have no knowledge of what they're doing to you. So I'm preemptively disclaiming. I don't know what they're doing to you or why or how. But I'm just telling our audience that just because you're not on the headlines in some criminal case doesn't mean they're not torturing you or doing nasty, vindictive little administrative things to make your life a living hell, because that's how these people operate. And that's my experience.
Yeah. You are absolutely correct on that and very well said. Right. So they did not leave us alone. They're so evil in their ways. It took us a little bit, but we decided that we needed to leave the state of Minnesota. So we are no longer in Minnesota currently. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, but you're refugees having fled Governor Wahl's rule. I mean, that's when you have to leave your home and leave your business and flee to another state because of persecution, political persecution. That's what people need to understand. That's what you get with Governor Walz.
It is. It was a whole lot of suffering. I call Tim Walz the tyrant of tyrants. And I know firsthand, Minnesotans know firsthand the evil that this man, Tim Walz, can orchestrate. And you take that evil, put it together with the evil Kamala Harris, what do you get? You get evil on steroids.
Right.
We do not want this team leading our country. We will become, in my opinion, we'll become communist country, excuse me, overnight. Senator Amy Klobuchar, Chris, said it really, really well when she was giving her speech at the DNC before Walz came on the stage. She said, Walz will do the same for the nation as he has done for Minnesota. And I absolutely agree with Klobuchar on that for maybe the first time. You know what he's done for Minnesota? He's destroyed our businesses. He destroyed livelihoods. He tells us, he says, mind your own business. You've probably seen that quote, mind your own darn business.
Right.
Well, it's time for him to mind his business and let go of that tyrannical rule over the people of Minnesota. I would like to see him gone, and I don't mean that I just mean that I would like to see him impeached and no longer
office.
A governor, or especially not leading the country. Crazy.
Well,
He's done a lot of damage.
If you want to see cities burn like Minneapolis.
Minneapolis, yep. In his speech, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. In his speech, another thing that he said was that he's all for freedom of health. He was talking about freedom, freedom, freedom. And of course, we know he's a liar. We know these people are liars, but he talked about freedom of health care decisions. Now, let's go back just a little bit when he was mandating that we all wear a medical device over our face.
Right.
And that's called freedom. I don't think so.
Yeah, he wants you inoculated and with a mask on your face and then killing as many babies as he can.
Absolutely. Up until moment of birth. And if it happens to be a botched abortion, well, we're not going to save that baby's life. We don't have to by law. It's horrible. It's horrific what he's done to the state of Minnesota and the legislature.
Well, Lisa, listen, thank you very much for joining us and for sharing your experiences. And I know that Judicial Watch viewers and listeners to this podcast appreciate your courage and your conviction. And you're really a shining example of an ordinary citizen just trying to live their lives who comes under the gun, comes under the microscope of a tyrannical state government. And you fought back, and you fought back bravely. And there's a lot of lessons to be learned from the way in which you engaged on this and how you, your own comportment, your own conduct of how you went through all of this. You're to be congratulated and thanked by Americans who value liberty, freedom, free enterprise, all those things that you stood up for. So thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Chris, for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to tell my story. So thank you so much again.
Thank you again, Lisa. I'm Chris Farrell on Watch.